Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your motherfucking ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 207 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of June 22nd, 2018. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me tonight is middling action platformer Dan Ryan.
I am so excited to see which of the two games we are talking about tonight you are describing as middling.
That's definitely only one of them. The Stone Age Gamer podcast summer series is back and Dan has chosen some interesting games for us to talk about. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the words Stone Age Gamer in the subject line, and you can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Chris.
I couldn't decide if I wanted to ask how you were doing before I did the reminder, but I'm going to go with the reminder. Is that okay with you?
That's fine.
Yeah, so tomorrow... Not for us, because we're in the past, but you're in the future. And if you're listening to this on Friday, Saturday, June 23rd at 6:30 p.m., we will be recording our next episode of the Stone Age Gamer podcast, which will be our panel at Too Many Games in Oaks, PA. It's at 6:30 p.m. It's in panel room 2. It's the annual Buy Something Will Ya competition where Dan and I roam the show floor and buy some weird stuff. Sorry, Dan, Dean and I buy some weird stuff and... When we talk about him, we'll also be following up with the 10-20-30 for hopefully the remainder of the time in the panel. And it should be a good time. Dan will be there live and in person. You can shake his hand.
You can. I'm good at that.
He is. He's very good. Shaking hands and kissing babies.
That's right.
He's good at it.
I'm a hugger, too. Like, I don't know if that's appropriate, but...
I just don't know if it's common knowledge, really.
I am a hugger. So, you know.
It's true. Good at commentating video games.
Fair to middling, you know.
Fair to middling. So, Dan, how are you?
I'm good, Chris. I'm all right. I've got some plans for content for the site coming up here over the next few weeks. I am excited about our panel on Saturday. I'm excited about the summer series coming back. I am furious that I was not able to get a crown in the ranking dungeon in Puzzle and Dragons this past week, which is about all I did was throw stamina at this fucking dungeon. And in order to get a crown, you had to rank in the top 6% of players.
Yeesh.
Which the cutoff score for that was like 117,500 points. Somewhere in that general area. The highest score that I was able to get was 115,800 points, which put me in the top 8%. Which is good, but
just
it's not
good enough.
Just not good enough. And like it wasn't even like a player skill issue. It just came down to the fact that I did not have the orbs in the proper places. Like I just never got the luck of the orbs, as it were, for the team that I was running. Because like when you're talking about that close of a race, it really does come down to like seconds or tenths of a second. And you know, like one extra skyfall on a combo could eat up 2 seconds and now you miss a crown. You know what I mean? Like that sort of thing. So that was but whatever. I still love it. Still good. Plus, I think, like, last week we also went a whole other week without talking about Puzzle and Dragons. It was our E3 review.
Yeah, it was our E3.
To be fair, I mean, Puzzle and Dragons isn't coming to any of the home consoles that I am aware of. It could work on Switch.
I was just about to say, I'm kind of surprised nobody's attempted to throw that on Switch yet.
Well, the microtransactions, I think, would be the biggest downfall of it, you know, because like games like that don't really exist on home consoles where you you certainly don't have to, but the opportunity is there for constant purchases. So I don't know, but whatever. The Magic the Gathering collab is coming up soon, And that should be super fun. Awesome. I have been playing, surprisingly enough, so last week, after, I think it was on Wednesday, so after we recorded, I woke up, and before I left for work, I was browsing Reddit, and there's a bunch of posts of like, hey, Sony just made Black Ops 3 free. A full game, downloads, you know, all the stuff. Go get it. Sure. So I went and downloaded COD Blops 3, and I've been playing that for like a week now. And it's pretty damn fun, actually. I'm shocked at how much I'm enjoying it. Mostly because I didn't pay for it, I think, is why I'm enjoying it so much. It's really weird. Like, you can run on walls. You can, like, boost jump, and, like, it's all futuristic and stuff. Like, I'm still not great at it, but...
Is it still free? Should I download it?
I don't know if it's still free. If it is, I would grab it. I mean, I don't see why not. It is a fun enough shooter. Like, there's some interesting stuff that they're doing in the game, and, like, I think it's mostly to hype up COD Blops 4, or Foe. I don't know how we're...
I don't know, but COD Blops still sounds like a fish disease.
It still does. Like, oh, man, my fish died. What happened to me? COD Blops.
He got the old COD Blops.
Got the old COD Blops. I mean, I'm not going to buy Black Ops 4, certainly. Like, this game, I wasn't like, oh, yes, I love this. Everything that I had wanted was in this game. I forgot. But, I mean, it's certainly fun to run around and be silly in for a little bit. So
yeah, I'm definitely not going to do that.
Yeah, no. But if it's still free, I mean, you know, go ahead and grab it. While you're talking, I'll check the store for you.
Yeah. Well, speaking of free, after E3, I downloaded Fortnite.
Yeah. How's that?
I don't know. It didn't make any sense to me. There's like zero tutorial. This is like, this is your character. It looks like a created character, but you don't create it. This is just your character. I'm like, all right. So then I'm jumping out of a plane. Okay, cool. I'm jumping out of a plane. This is kind of neat. And I land, and my son really wanted me to play it. You know, John was just like, I want you to try your new game. And I'm like, I don't know if you should see this game, but
okay,
I will load it up. We'll see how it goes. So it starts off, you know, it's got a nice personality. It's bright, colorful graphics. It looks nice. I'm running around. There's some dude. I see, like, there's another person nearby. And I don't really know anything about this game. I don't know if I'm supposed to try to kill everyone. Am I on a team? I don't know. So there's some dude over there. I think he sees me. I see him. We don't do anything. So I pull out this little axe, and I start just tearing things down and collecting wood, apparently. So I got all this wood. I'm, like, beating barrels and knocked over a water tower. Collected a bunch of wood. That was really cool. And then I turned around, and some dude shot me in the head, and I fell over dead. And I said, whoa, we're not playing this in front of John anymore.
So that's the end of this one.
This is not appropriate for kids.
like, COD Blops 3 kinda. Is still free, by the way.
All right.
So yeah, jump on there.
Yeah, I don't know. I might. I actually honestly probably won't, because really the next thing I have to do is, well, we'll get to that in a minute. So Fortnite's not for me. I mean, it might be for me. I've seen some videos of people playing it online, and my backlog's too darn deep to jump into something new like that right now. So I'm going to just...
Especially such a time sink like Fortnite.
Exactly.
Like, from what I understand is that is a game that gets much, much better the more that you play it.
Yeah, I'm sure once you know what the hell you're doing, it's a good time, but... Boy, I just don't have the effort in me to learn how to do what I'm doing. I guess first and foremost, the best thing to talk about is a giant, giant thank you to Matthew Hanola. I think I'm saying that last name right. And I believe Samantha Wheelow as well. I got a little present in the mail from our listeners, and it is a copy of Horizon Zero Dawn for PlayStation 4.
Which is awesome.
They heard I had a PlayStation 4, and the only game I had was Bubsy, and decided that injustice will not stand. So again, I am completely blown away by the kindness of our listeners, and I now have a copy of Horizon to play. I have not so much as turned it on yet. I've been working on a bunch of other things down here in the basement. I painted my shelves, because they were hideous. So I painted the shelves, which had all the systems on them. So the systems
had to be...
That's
good. I had been meaning to talk to you about the shelves.
They're very ugly.
Oh, the worst.
It looks so much better in black. They were all white before.
They were chartreuse, Who paints something chartreuse, Chris? I told you when you moved in, don't do it. You were like, chartreuse or puce? I'm not sure which. It's like, both of those
you
are
You tried
horrible.
To sell me on the periwinkle.
I did. But... periwinkle would have been great.
Yeah, no. So I hooked up my... everything's all hooked back up as of now. So that's good. The shelves look wonderful. I told Matthew that I'm going to get to Horizon, but I want to knock a few more things off of my list first. I spent more time with Blossom Tales. I finished the second dungeon. Game continues to be super impressive. The second dungeon was all like a fire dungeon and whatnot. And it's just real clever with the puzzles. It's just that I can't really say a lot more about it other than I said before, but I did dive back into it because I want to try and finish that game off. That's one of the things I want to put behind me before I jump into Horizon. Cause there's so many things coming out
right.
that, I'm already going to have a decent backlog on Switch, and I want whatever I'm working on Switch to not be as involved as Horizon. So I want to try to clear some things off my plate. I did finish Runner 3 yesterday.
Nice.
Definitely agree with the assessment that it is the most disappointing game of the year because it's not bad. It's great. Actually, it's really, really good. It's just not as good as Runner 2, which is a big disappointment. There's only 3 worlds in the game.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not many.
It's really not. And what they do with those worlds is really great. It's that even though there are like tons of multiple paths and things that you can do in those levels, like it really encourages replay. Which I'm going back now and doing the gem runs and trying to do the retro levels and stuff, which are a totally different game as well. I'll get to that in a minute, but it really just means that there are basically 3 environments. And with the crazy awesome stuff they do with these environments, it really disappoints me that when you fight the Timble Tot in the last world, it looks like it's heading towards the bit trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I want a world of that because that was one of my favorite things in Runner 2 was when you got to the last world was the bit trip and it was so gorgeous. And Runner 3 is so environmentally interesting. I would have loved to see them really unleash on the bit trip world, but they didn't. It was just the last boss battle. And then that was that. So I don't know. I still definitely recommend the game, especially since they announced they're coming out with a version. Their next update is going to include an easy mode, which I think is really, really needed for this game because, I was able to beat it because I've played Runner 1 and 2. Even Karen, who has beaten Runner 2 to 100% completion on all difficulties, she's stuck in this game on World 2 because... I think I mentioned the first time I was talking about this game is that it's not necessarily that this game is that much harder than Runner 2. It's just more unfair.
Okay.
Because you'd die in Runner 2 and it would be because you got to a section and you just hadn't figured out how do I navigate through this? You know, you'd get there and there'd be some bad guys or a pit or something. And you hadn't figured out how to time that or your reaction time wasn't fast enough. In this one, that rarely happens. In this game, when you die, it's because the floor fell out from underneath you. Or
that's not fair.
Exactly. There's just cheap deaths that happen, and they usually look really cool, but they're usually because there's no way you could have told. There's no way for you to know this is going to happen. Like, unless your reaction time is just so insanely quick...
Right.
You have to die a couple of times. Like there's these robots that jump out at you. And I know that they have some sort of tell. They can do one of 3 things. They can either swing their sword at you that you have to double jump over. They can jump in the air and swing, which you have to slide under, or they can put up their shield, which you have to block. For the life of me, I can't tell exactly what their tell is. Like they say in these little hint things when the game's loading, like, oh, the robot guys have a tell to tell you what they're going to do. Like, I'm sure they do, but I haven't been able to see what it is because this game is very busy with the backgrounds and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
And whatever that tell is doesn't seem to come up in enough time for me to be able to react to it. So it's always, I just have to keep guessing and figure out what they're going to do and memorize what the pattern is so that I can make my way through it. Which isn't, terrible except for the fact that the levels are really long So sometimes you wind up playing these just humongous sections of the game over and over and over again while you're just trial and erroring, figuring out how to get past this one part. And
that's annoying.
It is annoying. But for all of my complaints, it is definitely one of the games that I'll be nominating for our Waveback Awards this year, because the music is just wonderful. There are so many parts of this game that just left me in awe because it is so much fun, and it doesn't really lean into the beautiful as much as Runner 2 did. Like, Runner 2 was gorgeous and the music really reflected that. Right. And Runner 3 kind of tends to lean a little bit more towards goofy, which is fine. I just wish it had some more of those flavors of Runner 2 in it, but I digress. I finished all the gold runs and now it's just like, I'll keep playing it until I really want to stop playing it. So, but well, I haven't wanted to stop yet.
I mean, I am sorry that it was disappointing. You know, I mean, again, like we had said though, like it's one of those things where how could it possibly have lived up to the hype?
Yeah, living up to Runner 2 was a high bar to set, and I totally understand why they went the direction they did. I just wish there were more variety to the worlds.
Is there going to be DLC at all?
As far as I know, no, there's not. I believe I remember reading somewhere that the game is just done, but they also did leave the quote-unquote plot open for a sequel. Okay. So I hope there's a Runner 4, and I hope that it is a bit trippier. I hope that it's a little bit more magical. But there is absolutely no denying the talent of Choice Provisions. These guys are amazing, and I'm so happy that that game exists. Mega Man update. I'm on the Wily machine in Mega Man 9, so probably tomorrow or the next day I'll have 9 down and just 1 to go. So Anniversary Collection still rolling along.
Which is awesome.
It is awesome. Mega Man Anniversary Collections are so great. And I'm really enjoying playing them on the Switch. It's just nice to be able to play them anywhere on that screen. It makes me want more Virtual Console games to happen. So I can't wait till September and we figure out more about this stuff.
Right. But they will at some point.
They will. There will be more things. I've been playing so many different things. After our E3 rundown, they announced that the original arcade Donkey Kong was showing up on the Switch, which was like, that was an E3 highlight for me. That was one of my favorite things because I love the arcade version of Donkey Kong, and it's never been re-released on a home console before,
which is crazy.
It is crazy. I was like, if you look on their Hamster's Facebook page, there's like a bunch of people being like, no, this is a lie. It was in Donkey Kong 64. Blah, blah, blah. Like, no, it was not actually in Donkey Kong 64. You could access a version that they ported from scratch of the arcade version of Donkey Kong, but the actual arcade code has never been put anywhere before. And even if that one in Donkey Kong 64, you got to be like the first three worlds to get to it. And who the hell wants to play through three worlds of Donkey Kong 64? Not me. That game's garbage.
Yeah, it's not great.
Did not love Donkey Kong 64. I did love unlocking Donkey Kong, the arcade game, in it, but I did not love any of the rest of that game. I never even finished it. So I'm loving having it. My only gripe is that the sound is not correct.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hope that they fix that because there's been a ton of people messaging them like, yo, you got to fix the sound. Yeah, we finally got Donkey Kong Arcade on a home console and the sound is screwed up. Do something about that. Please, Mario's walking sound is like, it's the same tone over and over again instead of all the slightly different variations of that tone. And it just feels wrong. Everything else is perfect. It's wonderful. But that one sound issue is really bothersome. And when I'm paying $8 for, you know, a 4-screen arcade game, I don't mind paying that much for the arcade version of Donkey Kong. I think they do a great job. But at the same token, if I'm paying that much for freaking Donkey Kong, it better be perfect.
Be right.
Yeah. And right, it is not. But the E3 presentation on it was super cool because they had like the only dude who's still working at Nintendo of America who was also working in 1981. And he was telling all these, they had like, you know, some dude playing Donkey Kong and giving all these like tips on how to get high scores on it. And all the time this other guy's just telling stories about Nintendo in the 80s. And it was great. Including that Pauline is named after his ex-wife.
Really?
Yeah. So that was cool. Hmm. And also they announced that Skyskipper is coming out on the arcade archives. And Skyskipper was a Nintendo arcade game that was never released here in America. So I'm
Which
excited
is
to get that
too.
Which
is also pretty awesome.
Yeah. I wish that was part of their just, you know, their E3 presentation just left me so confused because while I loved it, like I loved every second of it because I love Smash so much. If I'm taking myself out of the equation, like why'd you announce Pokemon like 2 weeks prior? You know, and why was this Donkey Kong thing hidden until like they spent all this time detailing something about every character in the game? That should have been part of Treehouse, and the announcements should have all been part of the Nintendo Direct. But
yeah, I agree. Like it, I don't know. E3 was weird this year.
It was a weird thing. Really was. Similar to the PlayStation sale, there's a bunch of stuff on sale on the Nintendo eShop, and I finally picked up a copy of Pac-Man Championship Edition 2.
Nice.
This is so good. I've been wanting to get it, but it was $20, and I was like, do I want to spend $20 on Pac-Man? I know I'll get $20 worth of fun out of this game, but I don't know. I'm feeling cheap, and I don't need it right now. And then I saw that it was 50% off. It's like, yeah, I can't say no to this for $10. I loved the first Pac-Man Championship Edition on 360. So, have you played the second one?
No, I haven't.
It's really weird, man.
I'm sure it is. The first one was bananas.
It was. This one takes those bananas and like swings them over their head. So like, all right. So one of the things I like about the original one is just the how much you chain the ghosts. You know, you eat a bunch of pills on one half, and then they show up on the other hand. The power pellet shows up on the other side, and you can keep like getting them over and over again. These big stupid chains with the ghosts. Well, in this one, as I'm playing the single player mode, it works really similar. Except once you get you have to like collect these fruit because I'm playing the adventure mode, which is just like a bunch of, you know, stages over and over again. It's not really adventurous, but you know what I mean?
No, sure.
You know how that kind of thing works. It goes in stages, but you get the power pellets and like, all right, so there's all these like little mini ghosts around the stages, and the ghosts keep turning into these like long, like ghost centipedes, you know, they just keep getting longer and longer with these trails of ghosts behind them.
Sure. No, I mean, that's actually what ghosts do.
It is. Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
That's how that, yeah, that's fact. So it's definitely more realistic in that respect, which is what we want out of our Pac-Man games.
No, it absolutely is. I want the realest Pac-Man possible.
Definitely. So you can run into the ghosts and not die when they have all these like trails behind them. But if you run into them, then they're going to bounce off of you and they'll turn into more tangible ghosts, and then they can kill you in one hit. And they like start actively kind of chasing after you. But if you get a power pellet, then you have to eat the ghosts, but you have to eat them head on. Mm. So you can't come from behind them. You'll just bounce off them. You have to like run into their forward trajectory. And when you do, you eat like every single one of the trails behind them. And it goes, it does these weird camera pan out, cinematic, insane, weird swooping things. It's so weird, but it's really cool. Game's great, man.
That's awesome.
Highly recommend it. Oh boy. All right. I got two left because I'm playing apparently too many games. I've been playing the Octo expansion for Splatoon 2, which has been
How
pretty
is
great.
That?
It's great.
I'm debating whether or not to get that for the kid.
Well, I mean, have they done the regular single player campaign yet?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's more single player stuff. It's in these sort of more bite sized chunks, and it's, what is it? Like 60 new stages. Like there's a lot of content there.
Yeah. It's like $20.
Yeah, it's like $20. And if they liked the single player stuff, they'll like this. It's just a bunch of like really cool challenges. Like you have to get through this section with this weapon, or you have to get from point A to point B without getting hit and you have no weapons, or you have to fight all these guys that are flying around, but it's all indestructible floors. So you can't let your ink touch the floor or you lose playing area. It's a bunch of really clever things like that. I'm maybe 10 or 15 levels into it. It's all takes place in this cool subway system. And it's funny to bring it up on here because I remember there was a period of time when we were talking about sea cucumbers on this show.
Yes. Yeah.
And
sea cucumbers were really big on this show like 2 years ago. They were mage, as it were.
The friggin' and I think about it every single time I boot this up because the subway system is run by a bunch of sea cucumbers. And awesome. The main sea cucumber is, you know, initials C, initial Q, cumber is the name of the, I love the names in this game. Ridiculous. And he's a great character. The writing is really amusing. No, it's great. The Octo expansion is wonderful.
I just wish they wouldn't do that fucking Nintendo speak. I hate it so much.
I dig it.
The garbly, I just don't care for it.
You know what? There's certain games where it bugs me. This isn't one of them. I really like the weird sounds of this one because I wouldn't want it to be actually voiced over. And there's something about the characterization of like, now these people are all speaking weird underwater garbly language.
I suppose that there's a point there, but
it really fits this one. But I do get what you're talking about. Like, it was one of the things that was bothering me about Yooka-Laylee. One of the many things that wound up bothering me about Yooka-Laylee in the long run. But yeah, every single character is going, stop. Please stop. Like, make a noise and then let me read the rest of the words, like the way Zelda games do it, where it's like somebody be like, hey, and then you read a paragraph. Like, that's fine. Right. If that's how you're going to play it, then let's do it that way. But don't keep up all the weirdness. And I just find the Splatoon one to be an exception to that rule. But the best thing that I've played, is West of Loathing.
Because it's stick figures, Chris.
It is amazing. All right, so it's stick figures, and it really looks nice. It's very well animated with these stick figures. It's very adventure gamey, mm-hmm. You know, where like you find a bunch of ridiculous things, and your inventory is just this stack of ridiculous things. It is funny as all hell. And it's really weird. It's got tons of personality. There is some like turn-based RPG stuff in it, which is pretty boring, but there's not a lot of it. It's just like, and you fought a cow and you're done. Hooray. Cause so the story is that the cows came home in the West, and apparently the cows coming home was like a slaughter, as in the cows came home and murdered everybody. And so there's a bunch of like evil cows out West, and that's where you're heading. And, oh my God, I can't even put into words how much I'm loving this game. It is so ridiculously funny. Really early, like in the very beginning of the game, since I'm playing this like I'm playing a Monkey Island game, you find a bookshelf and you just start poking through the different books, and they all have these really silly titles. So I just kept doing it until it started repeating itself because, you know, that's how I want to play these kind of games. What I did in Monkey Island, it's what I did here. And eventually I came across a book that unlocked the ability of stupid walking.
All right, I'm in.
And stupid walking is exactly what you think it is. It does nothing to the game. Nobody reacts to it. But every time you move, you do something stupid. Like, you're just dragging your ass on the ground like a dog. Or you're doing cartwheels. Or you're waving your arms around like you're on fire. And it's completely random all the time, and it is absolutely hysterical.
That sounds amazing.
It really is. The game actually had me in tears. There's a saloon towards the beginning, and you find a spittoon, and you have the option to search the spittoon for, you know, hidden items. And in a very Monkey Island-esque way, the game says, "You're not serious. You're not going to do this, are you?" You just keep hitting yes, and like, all right, we're doing this then. You stick your hand in this filthy, awful spittoon, and you want to throw up in your mouth, and it goes to just extraordinary detail of you digging through the spittoon. I was in tears reading this.
That's
absolutely
awesome.
In tears. And, the only other thing I'll kind of spoil is I got to this town where there was this mining equipment, and there are three pieces of mining equipment, and you get to pick a partner at one point in the game. And I picked this girl. I don't even remember her name. So I have this girl partner, and you walk up to these three pieces of mining equipment, and the game says, "You don't know what these are. Ask your partner what they are, or explain to her what they are." So after her asking her to explain what they are, she was like, "I don't know. I think it's some kind of mining equipment. Let's do something else." And then I decided let's travel down the other path. So I start explaining them to her, and they give you all these options. Just completely make shit up as you go along. That makes no sense. Like, this is a horse expansion unit, and you go through all this ridiculous stuff, and you explain all three of the machines. And then after you do all that, you get a mind-splaining ability.
That's awesome.
Your female partner just rolls her eyes and says, "Okay, whatever."
That's fantastic.
This game is so freaking good. Is it on other platforms yet?
I don't know.
I meant to check this beforehand. West of Loathing is...
How much is it?
It was $11.
Okay.
Which is an odd price, but it is available now for $11. Yeah, it's on Steam and Switch. Mm.
It's coming to other platforms?
I don't know. It doesn't say it on their website. Let's see if Wikipedia has anything to say about it. It's a sequel to something else, I believe.
Really?
Kingdom of Loathing, which was, I just believe, on... it was a web browser game, Kingdom of Loathing, which looks fantastic now that I'm looking at it. It doesn't say anything about coming to other platforms. I hope it does. But even if it doesn't, like, just get this game however you can. Either get it on Steam, get it on Switch. This game deserves all the attention. It's so freaking good.
We are taking a trip next week down to Virginia, and that might be something that I bring along with me.
It's the writing is so up your alley.
It really sounds like it.
I mean, mindsplaining. Come on, that's
wonderful. Yeah. No, I'm all in.
You'll get the joke about the three horses. Like, earlier on in the game, there's some horses, and they all have explanations, and you'll get the joke because you're a smart guy.
I am a smart guy.
So that is my, of all the things that I've played, and I've played a lot, apparently. I've been talking for like 45 minutes or whatever about just the things I've been playing
really
the last 2 weeks. God damn, West of Loathing is so good. So good.
All right then.
Well, you know what? We've got our summer series, but I think we should probably take a quick break first, and then we'll just dedicate the rest of the show to the summer series games. Does that sound good to you, Dan?
Sounds like a plan, Chris.
All right.
Kay.
In that case, we're gonna do some commercials, and when we come back, we're gonna talk about our games for the first entry in the Stone Age Gamer Summer Series 2018. You're listening to the Stone Age Gamer Podcast from Geekgate.com. Stick around.
Got very Syphilin Ollie there for a minute.
Precious. I'm never wrong!
Buy my mattresses!
And now here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Dan.
Have you ever sat around in your basement, crowded, just fucking lousy with ancient computers, wistfully remembering days gone by?
You know, I actually have.
I know that you have. That's why I asked.
I got rid of all those computers, though. I'm down to two.
That's one too many.
Unless you count my Commodore 64. No, I'm not. No, that's not true. I have a Commodore 64. I still have my original Mac around here somewhere, too. I don't even know if that thing boots up, but it is ancient.
You should throw it out of a window. That is all it's good for at this point. Like, there's no point in keeping it. Just, you're a hoarder.
I am.
Anyway, Matt Much does too, Chris, far too frequently, actually, and he continues to regale us with memories of past technology, including his decidedly understated first gaming PC. If you've ever done heavy lifting on a sick day or failed to back up your hard drive, you'll be right at home with Into the Vault Dell XPS R400.
That Matt Much, he's wonderful.
He really is the best of us.
He is the best of us. And he writes so lovingly about these old computers.
He does.
It's quite nice. Anyway, the Waveback Podcast's seven...
The what?
The Waveback Podcast? The Waveback Podcast's seven-episode journey through the Super Smash Bros. Series continued this week, this time focusing on original adaptations of music from the various Mario franchises. From Super Mario Bros. To Wrecking Crew, the Smash series has featured some absolutely remarkable new takes on these classic songs. Join Matt and myself, not that Matt, not Matt Much, Matt Ramo. Rimo? Ramo? Matt R? Can ring the bell?
I feel like you should know how to say his name, Chris.
You know, we always just go by first names. I know how to spell it.
It's pronounced Fernandez.
Join Matt Fernandez and myself as we not only listen to these incredible tunes, but also give you a brief history lesson on where these songs came from. Don't miss Waveback, Episode 59, Super Smash Bros. Volume 2, Mario.
I mean, really though? Seven episodes?
Dude, I had to narrow it down from like 12 episodes.
Seven fucking episodes.
That's how much good music is in the Smash Brothers series.
Bananas.
That's the thing that's so bananas about it. I mean, for crying out loud, like, all right, I'm just going to look at my iTunes right now and look at Super Smash Brothers 4. Super Smash. Yeah, it helps if you can spell it. Like, the number of tracks... Super Smash Brothers for Wii U is 675 songs.
That's a lot of songs, Chris.
That's insanity.
More than 600.
It's way more than 6. And some of it is some of it's voice samples. I'll give it that. Some of it is voice samples, but it is at most like maybe 40 or 50 voice samples.
Just a bunch of like people sitting around going.
No, it's all the announcer saying Mario, Luigi, Peach, Bowser, like all that jazz. Wow, that was a really good Xander Mobius impersonation.
Yeah.
But let's say that 100 of those are that.
That's
still an insane soundtrack.
It really is.
So it's cutting that down to episodes of Waveback was not easy because a lot of that music is really good. One of the tracks in the Mario episode we did was Mario music interpreted by the Devil May Cry composer.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be in there. I don't disagree.
It's awesome.
Okay. Well, finally, Chris, season 2 of Legion has come to a close, and you better bet your sweet bippy it was as weird as ever.
Mm-hmm.
Featuring everything, Chris, from a snake, a fucking snake, Chris, fighting a goddamn T-Rex, to the main character, his name is Legion, obviously, essentially becoming a bad guy, or the show revealing that he may have been a bad guy the whole time. Legion on FX isn't afraid to leave its viewers with lots and lots to think about. What does this all mean for season 3? Where does the show go when its main character has just lost about all of his likability? Find out, Chris, your answers to those burning questions and more in Legion of Spoilers, Chapter 19.
You can catch all this great stuff, plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at geekade.com. We're back, and it
end
is time.
Front.
And front,
see
and side to side. Do the Bartman.
Ooh, wow. Taking it back. Simpsons did it.
They sure did.
I actually, Chris, just as a as a quick aside here, I had a real, an IRL Simpsons did it moment, which made me really, really happy. we were driving in the car, and one of our bunnies, we had two house rabbits because we're hipsters. One of them passed away from old age about a week and a half ago. Bunnies are supposed to live like 6 to 8 years. These guys they were over 9. So Waffles went to sleep one night, didn't wake up. So the kids were talking about, you know, like, well, when Pop-Tart dies, we're obviously going to get two more rabbits because we can't not have rabbits.
That would be absurd.
It really would. And one of my daughters said that she would like to get a rabbit and name it Snowball. And I was able to say Simpsons did it. And they said we would name it Snowball. And then the other one was like, well, I would like to name it Snowball. And then they were like, well, I could name it Snowball too. And I was like, fuck no. Simpsons did it. Made me really happy. It's really neither here nor there. I just wanted to share that with you.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So, Dan wanted us to play for the first of our summer series. He chose the games Spider-Man and Dick Tracy for the Sega Genesis.
Yeah, so in my defense, for one of them, because one of them I do really love. I like both of them. I love one of them. The last time I had played these games, I was in like single digits as far as age is concerned. It's been a very, very long time since I have played them. Which one do you want to start with, Chris?
Well, just real quick, I think it would be nice to reach out to the... we posted on the Stone Age Gamer Facebook page that we were playing these games and asked for some opinions. We got a few responses. One of them was actually related to the Spider-Man cover art, which I didn't really notice until now. Mm-hmm. Ozzy Barrientos on Facebook said, wait, isn't Spider-Man supposed to clutch his two middle fingers to spray web? And if so, could this have been another version of Spider-Man we could have had? Because if I'm looking at the cover, he's just got his hand open and the web's shooting out of his wrist. And that's kind of weird.
I am pulling up the image now. I've never noticed.
Yeah. Kevin Baldwin responded, he was already in flight, so he's coming from a hold from the web. To which Ozzy replied, but look at his other left hand. He's clenching his two fingers as of to shoot a web. Yet the web is loose as if he's letting it go. And shooting from the right, maybe the hands are the opposite of what each should be doing. Rushed art? I think you're right, Ozzy.
On a Genesis cart.
On a Genesis cart. Never. Yeah. No, I think Ozzy's right. I think the art was rushed. Then we have David Francis, who wrote, I think Dick Tracy has aged really well. It's pretty unique and is definitely still worth a look today for anyone who likes arcade-style run-and-gun games, or maybe walk-and-gun is the more appropriate term in this case.
Yeah, we're going to get to that point.
Yeah, we are. And then Zachary Hull said, Dick Tracy is infinitely better. I would tend to agree with Zachary Hull.
Let's go ahead and start with Spider-Man then.
Yes, let's start with Spider-Man. I said last week that I don't think I'd ever played this game before. And as soon as I booted this up, I said, oh yeah, this game.
So why did this get an oh yeah, this game? Because, well, okay, first of all, let's be clear. Because there are a couple Spider-Man games and they all get... confused on the Genesis. This one is technically the Spider-Man versus the Kingpin.
Yes, game. It says that nowhere on the box, but it says it on the title screen.
It does say it on the title screen. This is not the Maximum Carnage or the Venom
Separation
one.
Anxiety.
Separation
or
Anxiety.
Spider-Man the Animated Series or Spider-Man the X-Men Arcade's Revenge.
Nope, this is Spider-Man versus the Kingpin.
Yes.
Released on the Genesis in 1991.
Mm-hmm. This game is kind of like... It just is just the epitome of why I wasn't in love with the Sega Genesis. It's it's choppy. It's ugly. It doesn't look much better than an NES game. It's just bigger and more colorful. The animation is grotesque. And the reason that jumped out with the, oh yeah, this game is because I was like, oh yeah, I could never get past the first screen in this game because I have no idea what the hell to do. I'm jumping on rooftops, I'm climbing around, I'm avoiding some dudes sticking their heads out of windows, I stopped the robbery, I beat up a cop, and then I'm like, alright, what the hell do I do? So I've futzed around with this for like 10 minutes, just poking around like I'm lost. I have absolutely no idea what to do with this stupid game, and I hate it. And then I went on YouTube, and I started looking at a playthrough, and there's one tiny little window up in the upper right-hand corner.
You're Spider-Man. Okay. You got to crawl in the window. You
got to crawl in that one window. All the other windows that open up that like some dude sticks his head out of, those are off limits. But that one window, that's where the rest of the game is.
Yeah, there's not even like an arrow or anything. It's just like...
No, nothing. It's just part of the background. Arrow. Yeah.
Once you get past that, though...
It's still crap.
I'm not going to go so far as to say crap.
I would go so far as to say crap because like I'm running around and there's these mice making this weird like metallic sound going... It's... Ugh.
If you've ever been inside a mouse-infested building in New York, you would know that that is actually
that is 100% accurate.
It's 100%. It's terrifying. It's why people are afraid of mice, Chris.
I kept trying to kick him, and I couldn't kick him.
No, and, crawl on the little ceiling bit over top of them. There are some problems with this game. That to be sure. You said you think it looks ugly, though. I don't care for the visuals
in this. It's not like the ugliest game in the world. It's got so little style. Like,
let's see here, because I am assuming that you ignored my suggestion to break it down: graphic, sound, gameplay, control, story, replay, overall, 1 through 10. Give me your graphics 1 to 10.
My graphics, I settled on like a 3.
Really?
Because, I mean, many other Genesis games look so much better than this. Even other choppy early Genesis games like Quackshot. I mean, they're just, the colors are just not great in this. And so you get the Doc Ock, and it's like, as a still shot, he looked all right, but moving around, Jesus. I mean, I eventually watched a video of the rest of this game.
Mm-hmm.
The final fight with Kingpin is downright comical.
It's silly.
It looks awful. Everything about this, I thought, just looked dumb. And
I give this actually a 6 in graphics. Mostly because I really like, because keep in mind, when this game came out, and you saw the animation of Spider-Man swinging for the first time, like we can look back on it now and be like, it's not so great. But when you first saw that, it was breathtaking, right? It was so fucking awesome to watch Spider-Man shoot the web and actually pull, and there was like a sense of motion in that, and that was great. I thought Lizard looked really cool. I really love the way that they did Sandman, spoilers for a really old game that people aren't going to play. When you get to the Sandman stage, you're in Central Park, and after you beat the shit out of a gorilla for some reason and a bunch of snakes for whatever reason, I guess the zoo was broken into, you're walking by and you walk by a sandbox and fucking Sandman pops up out of there.
And you gotta like,
which is awesome.
You gotta get him wet or whatever, right?
Yeah, in order to beat him, you have to punch the fire hydrant and water shoots out, and that's how you defeat Sandman.
And isn't Venom like running around the whole time too?
Yeah, Venom's bouncing around. I don't know. Graphically, I think this game is okay, a little bit better than average. Like I would say that 5 is average, is a little bit better than average.
Well, here's the thing, and this is where I think. This is where I think I'm coming from with the graphics really being so offensive to me.
Mm-hmm.
And not just basing them on now, but remembering how I felt about it when I played it when I was younger, was that this was the Genesis, and the Genesis was like the 16-bit thing. But the year before, I was playing the Turtles arcade game.
Mm.
And if you're and this doesn't even sniff looking as good as the Turtles arcade game. Just nowhere even close. And seeing what they did with Altered Beast, like, okay, Altered Beast Arcade to Altered Beast Genesis, that's not a huge leap. That's a really good adaptation of the way that game looks and how cool it is.
Sure.
And knowing what the Genesis is capable of, and thinking in my mind, Turtles arcade game, or I can't remember if the X-Men arcade game was out at them, but I remember thinking Turtles arcade game, Spider-Man for Sega Genesis, this has got to be cool. And then firing it up at my friend's house and being like, what the hell is this? I still don't like it. And I got farther in it now than I ever had before. But so yeah, graphics, I'm going with a 3.
All right. What about sound?
As far as I'm concerned, this game owes me points for sound.
See, I put this as average sound too. Like,
oh, this is ugh. That what in what way? Like, there's no good thwip sounds. There's no good punching sounds. There's no good gun sounds. There's no good swinging sounds. There's like the sound of a Spider-Man's webbing up somebody isn't good. The rats sound like metallic things. Like, there's no good sounds, and there's no good music.
I'll take it down a point. The music to me was not. It's certainly not great, but it's not offensively bad. I never found it to be grating. You know, like, there was never a point where I was like, oh, this fucking part of this song again, son of a bitch. You know, like, it's just there, and it sounds good enough on the Genesis, you know, which, as we all know, barring a few games, does not have great music.
And that's the thing. It's not that this... Even the subpar stuff, like, if you think of the X-Men soundtrack, you know, X-Men was a few years later, it still sounded like a bunch of farts, but I would still pick that over this because it was at least music. There was just something really, this whole game felt very cheap. This whole game felt to me very similar to, and I hate to use this example because I know how much stigma is attached to it, but it struck me as very similar to something like E.T. on Atari, where it was like, okay, we got this license, now make a game out of it. Not like the new Spider-Man game that's coming out, that's like, we want to make a Spider-Man game, let's get the license. It was just like, we got this license, somebody make a game quick. And that's what this really felt like to me. There's nothing special about it. And this was definitely the case for a lot of Marvel superhero games back in those, back in the old days. You know, when you think of the other Spider-Man games.
They're not great.
Yeah, I mean, you got Maximum Carnage is pretty cool, and Separation Anxiety was pretty cool. The beat 'em ups were usually pretty decent, but
the
games
Avengers
that were like
one
this,
is cool. I like that one. It really wasn't until the NeverSoft Spider-Man game on the original PlayStation where it was like, oh no, this is cool.
Yeah, that this was when you good. Really started to. When video games went 3D, like I can't say that all the superhero ones were necessarily bad. I did dig to a certain extent X-Men on Genesis. I was much more of an X-Men fan than a Spider-Man fan.
Sure.
I was a big Spider-Man fan, but X-Men is like my jam.
Right.
And I really liked the X-Men Genesis game, even though it wasn't the X-Men arcade game, which was amazing.
Right.
And even that I feel is a better game than this because it just felt more like there was more thought put into it. Even if you're
It's certainly harder.
And there's certainly more obscure characters. Like, you're fighting Ahab in that game, for crying out loud. But
which is awesome.
It is awesome and really strange. Like, that of all the rogues gallery, that's what you're going with. All right.
Yeah. Mojo. Fuck Mojo.
Yeah.
Ahab. Fuck Mojo.
Yeah. Wasn't Mojo in the game too, though?
I think he was. So, all right. So what about gameplay? Now, in my mind, gameplay is a little bit different from control.
Yeah.
Whereas gameplay is the stuff that you can do in the game.
Yeah, like, is it fun? And this one, I'll give the gameplay somewhere around like a 5 or 4. Mm-hmm. 4 to 5.
I have it at a 4.
Yeah, I'd probably sit around 4 because I want to be able to swing around everywhere, but I couldn't. You know, I could climb on walls, which I guess is kind of cool, but it never felt good. And, you know, you just wind up in these very simple situations of like, all right, this dude's going to throw a projectile in this direction and I got to be Spider-Man and just kind of duck here and then jump up and punch him until he falls over. And
right.
It's just, the game is boring. Like, it didn't, I could not make myself finish this game. I finished it via a YouTube video and just, blech.
Well, and that's where it loses points for me, because in a Spider-Man game, it does get a little bit boring. The moveset that you have now, granted, we're working with a very limited controller at this point. We're working with a 3-button controller. Mm-hmm. When the game was released, so you know, there are some limitations to that, but
you know what, there, you know, are there, but at the same token
there were ways around that.
Look at our next game is a great example.
Right. There's very, very cool things that could have been done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do think it's, you know, some of the stuff is kind of cool. What always frustrated me about this game as a kid was, like, just some of the things were like, I'm fucking Spider-Man. I don't get knocked off of platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm Spider-Man. I don't get not like the fucking lizard stage where you get knocked into the fucking sewer and you can't get out. Like, I'm fucking Spider-Man, dude. Like, come on. Like, you hit me and I'm like, oh, shit, look, I'm still stuck to it. Like, that always drove me nuts as a kid. Mm-hmm. But then when you look at the control, the weird thing about this game is that it does get more fun to play when you figure out the weirdness of the control.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a very particular way to move Spider-Man through this game. So, like, you jump with the C button, and then you have to hit C again to stick to the wall, right? And when you're sticking, you have to hold the button down as you're sticking to something, and when you release it, he jumps up again, and he's got a real floaty jump.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hit the A button while you're jumping, he will shoot out the web to swing. That's also one of your attacks, is to shoot out the web. And then the B button is a kick button, which is, you know, pretty limited. I didn't love the fact that there wasn't, like, a multiple animation, like a combo animation for the kick. Mm-hmm. It was just a repeated kick over and over. But once you figure out the controls and some of the weirdness to it, it does control pretty well for what they were trying to do, and it was certainly the first time that a Spider-Man game felt a lot like Spider-Man. Like, you're sticking on shit, you're upside down, you know, there were different cool things that you could do.
I will concede that the controls are competent, so I will give the controls in this a 6.
Okay.
A solid 6.
That is where I have them as well.
Now, because while they are competent, they still aren't intuitive or great.
No, and there's no help given to you.
Yeah.
You know, this is back in the day when video games were like, fuck you, figure it out. Read the instruction manual. You threw that away, you dumb shit? Figure it out. Sorry. So, story.
It's story's there. Pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I have that as a 5 out of 10.
I'd give it higher than that.
It's not the most original story, but it does have characters that I like. It's got the Hobgoblin. It's got, you know, Sinister Six, basically.
I was gonna go 7 on that, just because, yeah, the story is basic as hell, but the writing was there. Mm-hmm. And at this time, that was really cool. Because you didn't get a lot of, like, you could... Spider-Man's personality came through in those silly-ass cutscenes where he's interrogating everyone. And, yeah, the story's dumb, but the writing captured the personalities of these characters well enough.
Have you ever been to Islands of Adventure on the Spider-Man ride down there? Okay. On the Spider-Man ride, the 3D ride that they have in Florida, it's really awesome. And it is based around Spider-Man the Animated Series. So it's got that dude's voice in there.
Yeah.
That, to me, whenever I see video game Spider-Man or animated Spider-Man, it is that 90s Spider-Man cartoon. That is the voice that I hear. So, like, reading through the story bits in here, because obviously none of it was voice acted. Reading through the story bits, it does come through in that voice. You know, Kingpin from the show and all of that. So, I mean, that being said, it is a pretty by-the-numbers Spider-Man story, which is why I only put it at a 5. Got this. It's there. It's competent.
I definitely give it higher, just because you're right. By a Spider-Man story standard, it's not great, but by a Spider-Man video game standard in 1991, it was really cool. Like, it was cool. Kingpin taking over the TV, smoking a cigar.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
That is pretty sweet. And Venom's in it. Hobgoblin. I mean, yeah, it's got
and
good characters.
The way that they wrote them was a good time, and I appreciated that a lot.
All right. What about replay value? Do you think this is something that if somebody liked the game, is there something to go back to?
Well, I mean, kind of, because this game is very speedrunny. Like, it's definitely got, like, this is how you need to do this. So you could spend time mastering this game and, you know, memorizing all the patterns and where everything is and then just going to town. So, yeah, I guess there is something, but I don't know.
I put it at a 5.
I put it at a 4.
Okay, that's fair. I think because there is, you know, like you said, there is a speedrunning aspect to go back to, but... You know, once you beat the game, it's not like it's so mind-blowing that it's like, oh, this is fucking amazing. I can't wait to play this again. Like, there is some... what I liked about video games back in the day, and, I mean, still to a point, you can still do it, but, you know, you can try and play through this Spider-Man game and not use your web shooters. Like, that would be an option. You know, if you wanted... Because, like, when we were kids, we used to make up challenges for ourselves. You know, like, I've beaten this game. I'm not getting another game for a while because I'm fucking 10 and I'm broke. So how can I get more replay value out of it? I know. I'll try to do it this way. Or I'll try to use only web shooters. You know, so stuff like that, for me, I put this at a 5 for replay value. But what about overall? 1 to 10 overall, Spider-Man for the Genesis, 1991.
I give it a 4.
I put it at a 6. A little bit better than average. Not great.
I consider it below average. I did not get any enjoyment out of this game except for occasionally reading the little quips in the story segments.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, for me, that second level, the level with the lizard, is so frustrating. Because if you get knocked off the platform, and there's some pretty cheap shit in that one, like little things popping up out of the water that like knock you into the sewage. Once you get past that, though, there's some pretty fun stuff to do. The level with Sandman is awesome. Venom is really cool in it. The fight against Electro is kind of fun. I like it. I don't love it. I certainly don't love it as much as I did when I was a kid. You know, looking back on it, I'm not like, oh, fuck, what was I thinking? But it is this isn't as great as I remember. So for me, this one gets a 6. Would you recommend somebody play it, though?
If you're a huge Spider-Man fan and interested in the history of Spider-Man games, I recommend you trying it, but I mean, I did not get almost any enjoyment out of this, because I just don't think it's a good game. And I think it reminded me of what I didn't like about Genesis games for the most part. It's one of the reasons I'm a Super Nintendo guy over a Genesis guy. There's just nothing about this, the presentation of this and a bunch of other early Genesis games that kind of put me off to the system, because there were things about them that looked better, but there were many other things that just didn't really work for me.
I would agree with that entirely. I think if you are a big Spider-Man fan and you have never played this before, find it and give it a shot. You know, you might end up really liking it. It's an interesting piece of video gaming, and it, you know, like if you go back and look at the Spider-Man on the 2600, like... That game is awful. Yeah. It is horrendous. And if you look at the superhero games that we got on the NES, mm-hmm. Apart from Batman, they're pretty wretched. I mean, like, as a whole, this was like the first decent superhero game on home consoles. So there's at least something to look at there,
I guess.
My opinion.
I don't know that I'd call it the first decent home console superhero game. I don't remember enjoying much before that, but yeah, I mean, like, you know, Spider-Man, was it Return of the Sinister Six for NES? Isn't great. Yeah,
no,
you're right.
It's terrible.
You know, Batman was pretty great, but Batman was also pretty weird.
Yeah, it's not a Batman game. I mean, it has Batman in it, but it's not a Batman game. Maybe that'll get voted.
Thinking of X-Men and Wolverine, and more importantly, X-Men for Nintendo. God, those games were
so bad.
Bad.
So that it's the Wolverine and the X-Men is the top-down one.
That's just X-Men. Wolverine was the side scroller.
God. I mean,
yeah.
Horrendous games.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you had at this point Superman in the arcade was out. Mm-hmm. But I mean that was never released on home consoles.
Turtles kind of doesn't really count because it's not really superheroes.
Yeah, I mean I'm talking like big popular superhero games. This was the first one where it was kind of like, all right, I see, like there's maybe a thing we could do here.
Yeah, I still wasn't there yet.
Yeah, oh, that's fair.
I lump this in with those other superhero games. I just don't.
I do think it's worth giving a shot, but not something like. Don't break your neck trying to get a hold of it.
Exactly. I would not do that.
Now, on the other hand, Chris,
on the other hand, we have Dick Tracy. Now, Dan, why did you pick this game?
I fucking adore Dick Tracy. When I was a kid, I would go to visit my grandparents in Florida. They lived in Cape Coral, Florida. And down in Cape Coral, we happened to go, my grandmother and I, we happened to go to whatever store we went to. Might have been a Walmart, might have been a Target, might have been a fucking Bradley's or James Way. I have no idea. I don't remember. But there was a big bin out front of books that were $3, right? And being a young child, I was like 8 or 9, maybe 10 at the time, you know, who was super into comic books and, you know, reading newspaper strips and all of that stuff back then. There was a big blue hardcover book. I still have the book. And it was the complete works of Dick Tracy. And it was Chester Gould's original comic strips of Dick Tracy comics, just all collected in an oversized hardcover book. And I started to read through it and I fucking fell in love with it, man. Like hardcore, the simplicity of Chester Gould's line work, the simplicity of the story, coupled with, you know, this kind of weird quasi futuristic thing that was going on in Dick Tracy at the time with the, you know, his watch and the inventiveness and the creativeness of the villains. I mean, Dick Tracy's Rogues Gallery is incredible. I mean, there's just
certainly weird.
So, it's so weird. I mean, just weird, weird stuff going on with the Dick Tracy stuff. And that was really cool in this book. There was, you know, there was profiles, basically, like police blotter profiles written about, you know, about Prune Face and about Flat Top and 88 Keys and Mumbles and Itchy and like all of these, like all the Breathless Mahoney, all the different weird characters and even ones that did not make it into this game or subsequently the Warren Beatty movie that came out, which is what this game is based on, you know. So then come to find out that a movie was coming out of this thing that I had just discovered that was already years and years old at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, this movie was coming out and I fucking love this movie. I adore this movie. It's horrible.
I haven't seen it in years, but I remember really liking it when I was a kid.
It's got such a personality to it. It is very much its own thing. And I mean, Al Pacino is big boy. He fucking goes for it, man. Like he is acting his balls off in this movie and it's not great acting, but he goes for it. And Warren Beatty is great as Dick Tracy, and Mandy Patinkin is 88 Keys, and Dustin Hoffman's in it. I mean, like this movie had a ton of heavy hitters. Madonna was in it, which was fucking weird and doing that song and shit. But you know, the movie was popular enough to give us this game, and Dick Tracy has been this kind of constant thing that I have loved my entire life and would really love to see somebody take and really give like an honest modern spin to while still keeping some of the charm of the original. You know, it felt very similarly to me the way old Batman stories feel. you know, like the 60s Batman TV mm-hmm. show of certainly not as campy. It took itself a little bit more seriously than that did, but the weirdness and the inventiveness of it was still there. So, you know, video game comes out and I'm like, well, fuck, I gotta play this. And I loved this game and still do, I found, when I played through it.
I liked it. I wouldn't go so far as to say that I loved it. It reminds me a lot of Kung Fu Master.
Okay.
It is very, very similar to that, where it's relatively, I mean, it is slow. Mm-hmm. Dick Tracy is not in a hurry to get anywhere.
No, he's not. I feel like that's very much on purpose, though, for what's going on with the game. Because there's a lot going on.
It's a lot of murder.
There is an obscene, like, okay.
He's giving Nathan Drake a run for his money. You think Nathan Drake kills folks in Uncharted 2. You shooting everybody. And they're also well-dressed.
They are very well-dressed.
And the ones in the red, those dudes are acrobatic. They're, like, rolling around on the streets and whatnot. Whoa, settle down there, partner.
So, all right, let's go through. Graphics, 1 to 10.
I would say, as far, you know, definitely take into consideration when this came out, I'd give this, I'd give this like a 7.5 to 8.
I'd give it a 9. I love the way the characters animate in this. Dick Tracy does move very slow, but while he is moving, it looks really good when you're riding on the car in certain segments. The coat is flapping in the breeze. When you switch to the Tommy gun, so you can shoot in the background, it looks really cool.
That stuff's great. The only real ding that I give this one, the reason I would go, you know, 8 instead of like 9, is because the NES counterpart has the cutscenes move more, and all the cutscenes are just still shots, and that's a slight disappointment to me.
That's fair. That's
the only reason I'd really ding it. But it is a very nice looking game. As far as, you know, the destructible backgrounds, things like that, is very very clever. It does repeat itself a bit,
sure.
But, you know, all in all, the boss characters, even when they're in the background, like they usually are still fairly recognizable.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can tell the difference between Big Boy and Flat Top. Like, you can see that it is Flat Top in the background, and. I mean, it really captured, I think, the look of the film. You know, it's got Dick Tracy with the bright yellow trench coat on, even though it probably really wasn't supposed to be yellow. It's more of like a super saturated khaki, but whatever. You know, but it still captures that kind of noirish vibe. Captures the time period very, very well. Like, all of the enemies that are in suits are in suits of that era. And I thought they did a really nice job of distinguishing because you're basically, I mean, just murdering by the thousands dudes in suits. But based on the color of their suit, changes what they are going to do.
Yeah.
And there's enough of a graphical difference to know, like, all right, this guy is going to follow this pattern.
The gray guy is going to stab me in the shins, while the green guy is going to throw limitless dynamite at me.
Right, because he just has an endless fucking supply of it. Yeah,
because that's safe. God forbid that guy trips, right?
Oh, God, he's done. You know, but also considering this came out also in 91, same year as Spider-Man, this looks worlds better than Spider-Man.
Yeah, leagues better. It's so much more... solid. It's so much more cohesive. It's you know, like, yes, it's more vibrant and more alive and all that jazz, and, you know, you're talking about two very colorful comic based things, but it's the cohesion that gets me on this one, because this one looks like a finished product. It doesn't strike me as choppy, and that all the pieces fit together, the worlds make sense, and I didn't get that out of Spider-Man.
What about the sound?
The sound I was also very impressed with. Again, it's the Genesis, so there were certain things, like when you're in the car stage and the other car is bumping into you, that sound effect was really terrible.
Yeah.
But all in all, the sound, you know, the punching sounds all right. The music is very cool.
The music is very good.
Very well composed. It's the early Genesis trying to do, you know, 40s jazz is... interesting.
Right. it's an interesting thing.
It's an interesting thing. And I think for given the tools that they had, they pulled it off pretty well. So,
Early 40s era Chicago jazz.
Yeah.
On a Genesis in 1991.
All things considered, I'd give the sound a 7 in this one.
That's where I'm at with mine too. The Tommy gun sounds really good.
Yeah.
When you're shooting the Tommy gun, it sounds nice and accurate. And, I thought they did a good job on that.
They did. They really went for the movie aesthetic, and I think that they nailed it. Things got better on the Genesis as time went on. But
certainly,
given the era this came out in, given the tools they had to work with, my only gripe with the music is that it's not necessarily memorable, but the general vibe was accomplished, and that's I think a very impressive thing. All things considered,
what about gameplay?
Gameplay. All right. So here's the thing about the gameplay. I likened this to Kung Fu. It reminds me so much of Kung Fu because it's mm-hmm. just, it's a very methodical, dudes are just coming at you. You have a couple of different attacks. The shooting into the background is a really great concept. I really liked the idea of it once I figured out what it was. Cause I didn't have the instructions. I was playing this on my Pi.
Right.
And, figuring out like, oh, you got to shoot these guys in the background. So it's given this kind of dual layered situation. But I always wanted to just take my Tommy gun and keep shooting the dude in front of me. So the fact that I had to keep switching back and forth between the guns, like I get the concept was great. It was, a little bit harder to control than I think I would like it to be. If you're not facing, like say you're walking to the right and one of the bad guys shows up on the left and you don't tap left before you start shooting, you got to slowly pan your way all the way across with your bullets before you get to that guy. And that guy may hit you before you get that far.
Right.
So while there's a lot of really great concepts going on, it's not quite enough to fill the game. Because mm-hmm. it winds up repeating itself a lot. So it's got, it's maybe about it's about 10 times as long as Kung Fu, but it's only about 3 times as diverse. So the game did feel like it was overstaying its welcome at a certain point,
I think that's fair.
After once you're repeating that enough, like Kung Fu is done after 5 stages and that's it, because that's how much game there was to do. And I just kind of feel like once they started really repeating the things that you were doing in this game, and also just some of the enemy placement, some of the patterns you have to learn, you're walking around and there's just a dude drops a little tiny bomb out from behind a trash can. It's like, I felt like some of the deaths and the difficulty was getting a bit cheap at that point. It almost felt quarter munchery, it almost felt like an arcade game that was trying to get you to pump more quarters into it.
Yeah. It was very much of that era.
It
was very much of that, we're just going to put shit in here and you're going to die a bunch until you memorize it.
But it also never felt as rewarding as, say, something like Ninja Gaiden that was also cheap as hell. But
sure,
that game felt better than this one. So gameplay, I have to give it a lot of credit for trying to do what it was doing, because again, this is coming from an era when people were getting licensed and this was a hot movie property to get, and there's no way it was cheap. So making a game off of this property with the funds that you had left after paying for the license, I think they did a pretty good job. I can't not compare it to the NES version, which was, a bit weirder, a bit more of a brawler. But it visually held up pretty well against this Genesis one, which is, I guess, a conversation for another time. But there wasn't enough diversity to carry this entire game. And what was there, I think the way that they increased the difficulty was not the smartest way to do it. It just didn't feel right. So I'd say gameplay, I'd give it a 6 feels too low, but 7 feels too high, so I'd give it a 6.5.
See, and I waffle between a 7 and an 8 on this one, mostly because of some of the things that you brought up, of the fact that this was one of the first games I can remember where you're playing against enemies both in the foreground and in the background.
What was so cool about that is that it reminded me of something like Xevious. You know, like it's right. like those old shooters, like that stuff they've been doing since the 80s, but applying it to this kind of formula was
right.
to a play, not a platformer, just a side scrolling action game was a really clever thing to do.
Really clever. And the destructible environments, the fact that there were some driving stages mixed in that were mm-hmm. fun, you know, it wasn't like they weren't tedious to get through as other games had been at that point.
They were a really great breath of fresh air too, because they weren't as cheaply difficult as some of the levels surrounding them.
Yeah, no, they were kind of fun, and you could do some kind of cool stuff. Like you could take out, you know, whatchamacallit. Like you could shoot the guys in the background with the Tommy gun, or you could just duck and wait uh-huh. for them to drive by and do all that stuff. I like that there were the bonus stages after you complete each mission.
Yeah, a little Hogan's Alley style bonus stages. Those are pretty cool.
And that's pretty cool. And that looks really great too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like there's a ton of gameplay variety in there. I don't love the little platforming bits. When you get to the final stages at the end, you get to, there's some platformy stuff that happens. And it's not because of the slowness of the animation. It becomes a lot harder to do some of the jumping animations and whatnot. So that takes it down a point. But yeah,
stage two is complete bullshit too. Like, all right, I get the hang of this. I got Tommy guns. I got my regular gun. I'm shooting all kinds of guys. It's great. Stage two, I'm out of ammo.
Shit.
Bullshit. Yeah. You're out of ammo. I had infinite ammo in the last stage. Well, how very dare you?
He hadn't gone back to base yet.
And go back. Next stage, you're back to infinite ammo. Okay.
Yeah, that's
that
a little weird.
Bullshit.
That's more of a yeah.
And that stage is not fun. The shooting stuff is all really fun. But like, all right, the cool hook that this game had was this second lair in the background, and then all of a sudden, nah, never mind, you're playing bad dudes now. Damn it.
Yeah, you're playing
bad
very
dudes
slow
is
bad
awful.
Dudes. So, like I said, I kind of waffle between a 7 and an 8, but I do think it does a really nice job of trying to give you some variety, you know.
It does.
What about the control itself?
The control itself, it's pretty good. Again, I would give it A for effort a lot. Like I said, the thing with the Tommy gun in the background, that I think could have been handled a little better as far as the actual aiming. I'm glad they went with. I really liked that there was no reticle. It was just like, this is where the bullet holes are. That's how you can tell where you're shooting. That's right. Kind of cool. But anytime.
And a nice big burst, like it wasn't ambiguous of where it was going. There's a nice bright burst.
Yeah, there's no question of what it is you're doing and where you're shooting. I wish that moved a little bit faster, or
it's
was in some
slow.
Way more wieldy. Yeah, because one of the issues that I'd have is that there'd be all these guys coming at you at once, and if you didn't already know where those guys were coming from, you'd have to move around to kind of react to them showing up.
Right.
And sometimes if there was like a guy up, like where you didn't just have to move left and right, when you had to like eventually move up and down to hit guys, that would kind of throw the whole thing off. And you know, you just got to be paying attention to the guys that are also walking up in front of you waiting to shoot you in the back of the head. So I don't know. Outside of that though, the controls did feel pretty tight. So yeah, the controls, I don't really have much of a problem with them. So I'd give them a 7.
Yeah, that's where I am and with mine as well. I throw it a 7 at it. Not perfect. It could have moved a little quicker. And I'm not talking like Dick Tracy didn't need to run, but a little bit. I mean, he fucking saunters.
Simon? No, it's Christopher. Yeah, he's not Christopher Belmont from Castlevania the Adventure,
right.
But he's not, you know, Simon Belmont in Castlevania either. He's moving like between those two speeds, and it's just not quite fast enough.
It's not quite what you would expect from a video game. It's not quite a video game speed.
And it's like ridiculous. Like, okay, I get it. I guess you're maybe shooting for some level of realism, but you know, Dick Tracy's not going to jump his own height.
Right.
So you've already thrown realism to the wayside. You've got to focus more on fun. And this game's pace really needed to pick up a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. What about the story overall in this one?
I don't have a ton of things to, I don't have a ton to say about it because this was one that I didn't finish. I didn't get super far. I think I got to the stage past the first car stage.
Okay.
And, you know, the story was, it was just following the basic plot of the movie, right?
Yeah, it really does. Like, I give the story a 5, mostly because while there are some cutscenes and there is some dialogue up on the screen, it doesn't really do anything to tell you what is going on other than, like, all right, I'm going after Itchy now, and now I'm going over after Flat Top, and, like, oh, now I'm a big, you know, like, it.
Yeah, and the ending is just, like, Dick Tracy saves the day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like,
okay.
It needed a little bit more. Now, if you have seen the movie, you kind of know what's going on. If you are familiar with Dick Tracy's stuff, you're kind of familiar with what's going on. But overall, as a storytelling platform, this is, like I said, I only gave it a 5. It's the lowest thing I gave it. It needed some work.
Not Ninja much. Gaiden, this is not.
No, it's definitely not. So, what about Replay?
Replay, I'd give this Replay goes pretty well in this one because I was looking forward to going back to this. I didn't have a ton of time to play it the other day, and then I was looking forward to playing it again and seeing how much farther I could get right before the show tonight, and that's when I got past the car stage. I would bring this up there to again, I'd say I'd bring it up there to about a 7. It's more because it is intrinsically fun. It does get old, but I would go as far as to say replayability to give it a 7 because, you know, it's the kind of thing that'd be fun to go back to every couple of years or so.
And I do. I'm between a 7 and an 8 on this one because I do go back to it. I have played through this a ton of times. I do like trying to get better at the little Hogan's Alley bonus stages because as you go through the game, your time to react to the... Because what the bonus stages are for... those of you not familiar with the game or familiar with our Hogan's Alley reference, 3 cards pop up and you have your ABC buttons on the Genesis controller. So you have 3 targets to shoot. And depending on what pops up in front of you, you either have friendly characters or the Rogues Gallery pops up and you have to obviously only shoot the Rogues Gallery. The first time you go through the bonus stage, you have what seems like a fucking eternity to make a decision. by the time you're at the end of the game, you have to be lightning quick to hit everything. And if you do well enough in the bonus stages, you get extra lives and continues, which is kind of a nice little incentive for doing well in the bonus stages. So I've always gone back and tried to get better at it. And, you know, some years I'm great at it and other years like today, I did not do very well. I played through again, but I was more rushing through to try and, you know, get to it again. I do like going back to play and see the different environments and see the characters, like especially the last fight against Big Boy is really cool. Like you're in this like weird clock tower building and like by the time you get to the end of the stage, he's fucking chucking gears at you and shit. Like and there's a bunch of doors and he's popping in and out of doors and, you know, like he'll be at the top of the screen and the bottom and then left and right and all very quick and you have to react. And there's a lot of fun to be had in this game.
Agreed.
Overall.
Yeah. Overall, I give this one a 7.
I give it an 8. I think this is an awesome game. I think this is something that everybody should go back and check out. I think it still holds up.
It does. You know, it still holds up. It's a fun game. It just has... it has issues, and it's definitely not the best the Genesis has to offer, but
it's definitely not, but it's not something that you play through and go, oh God, you know, like this is something that is very much of its time, but it is a very good example of what that time was like in video game. And it's honestly still to this day, probably one of the best licensed movie games that's ever been made.
all right.
I mean, really, if you think about it, like, this is infinitely more enjoyable than Enter the Matrix.
Well, way to set the bar.
But, I mean, really, think about other licensed movie games that you've played.
Jurassic Park for Super Nintendo. It's a great game.
I didn't say it was the best. I said it's one of.
I mean, well, there was a lot to that one. I mean, geez, I'm trying to think of other movie licensed games that I have played.
You know what, Chris? Podcast for another podcast.
That's a podcast for another podcast. But I don't know. I do appreciate that you really love this source material, and that's definitely a part of this.
That also kind of kicks everything up a notch of like, there is a Dick Tracy game. It's good.
It's a solid game. There is no getting around that fact. This is a solid game.
Yeah. I really, honestly, for someone who loves the source material as much as I do, there is nothing that I look at in this game where I go, oh, well, this tarnishes everything I love. You know, like we were guests on the Super Nintendo podcast, and we just recently did our fantasy draft for Super Nintendo games, and I picked Ultraman because I love Ultraman, and there's an Ultraman game. It's fucking horrible. There's no fun. There's a little bit of fun to be had with it, but it's a horrible game. It's not a game I could recommend. I even have a hard time recommending it to people who like Ultraman who are interested in like old school Japanese kaiju stuff. Like, that game's awful. It's just bad. This Dick Tracy is a good example of what can be done. You know, like, you could tell that the guys and girls who made this game actually gave a damn about making a good game, not just cashing in on a very hot property at the time.
Agreed. Agreed, agreed.
So overall, not a bad first week.
Yeah, not a bad first week. I like both of these games better than Karnov.
Yeah, but I mean, and both of these, on a scale of 1 to Karnov, I mean, where does it rank? Now, we've got a ton of other games here, Chris, that you and I both came up with. Are we putting those up for vote this week?
I think we might do that next week. I think we're going to put something up for a vote next week. But we have, Dan and I have come up with a pretty sizable chunk of games. And I would love to make Dan play Echo the Dolphin, but I just don't think it's going to happen. But if you guys want to vote for it, just throw it out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest. I'm just going to watch a YouTube playthrough. Not playing it.
Might actually be the best thing for all parties involved.
Like, the rest of these, I will actually play through. Like, and we're talking about, like, we've got some stuff on this list coming up, Chris. We've got a game I didn't even know existed until I started doing some research for our summer series this year. The Flash on the Sega Master System.
Oh, you didn't know about that game?
I had no idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
It's pretty neat looking. I've never actually played it, but I've watched videos of it before. It's a neat looking game.
Well, we might get to play it, Chris.
We might get to play it. But so look out on the Stone Age Gamer and Geekade social media pages. We're gonna be taking votes again. And figuring out what we're gonna be playing. We'll be doing two games per month. So the two games with the most votes will be the games that we get to play. And
we're gonna do our best to beat them.
We're gonna do our darndest to beat them. And hopefully I'll do better than I did this time.
Well, and if I can't get through it, I will look up Game Genie codes and I will cheat.
Same here. Here, here. boy, we came up with a heck of a list of games here.
We really did. There's a lot of really fun stuff on there. Stuff that I actually really want to play.
Jeez, Beyond Oasis.
Yeah.
Good times. All right. Well, that's going to be our show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening. Join us next week for our Too Many Games panel. Very special episode featuring our Buy Something Will You panel from Too Many Games, where, like always, we will devolve into a whole host of nonsense because we are bad at pacing. And by we, I mean me.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, me too.
Yeah, but to be fair, you were on a TV last year, so
that's true, and it was awesome. But
it works better when we're in the same room together. So
I don't know. I kind of want to be on the TV again this year. Like, even if I'm there, I still kind of want to be on the TV.
We'll just put a Dan Headroom in the corner too. It'll be great. It's a
good idea.
Plus, I think the 10, 20, 30 this year is a bit more interesting. So there's cool stuff to talk about. So yeah, there you have it. Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram @Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content. Boy, I lost my place. Where the hell was I? Something about Twitter. Find us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at @_Geekade. Find us individually on Twitter. I'm @GeekadeChris. And Dan is at
Geekade Dan.
At Geekade Dan. If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making sure the show is listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, or his website, which we'll have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on geekade.com for even more fresh original content. That is it, everybody. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.